this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time.
Welcome to Wellness and Dentistry. I'm your co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson, a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, thought leader, and author. And I'm joined by my very good friend and co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley, who is a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness and dentistry. And if you're unfamiliar with us, we invite you to check out our respective links, websites, and course offerings that are linked to this episode. And speaking of course offerings, if you like what you hear and you want to hang out with us because we're super fun, we have our next version of Lightside Live being hosted in Irvine, California by Glidewell Dental Laboratory this coming May 9th and 10th, where it's an in-person opportunity to talk about all things wellness and mental health with your colleagues, because nobody understands a dentist like a fellow dentist. So today what we're going to do is we're going to talk a lot about communication, consistency, and shall we say success and pitfalls in communication. So first of all, hi, Kyle. How are you?
Hello. Yes. A topic that we love to talk about, which is communication, that cannot be talked about enough.
Nope.
And I think some of the nuance of what we're going to talk about today, too, is when communication is leaving your practice. So that could be you talking to a patient and then they bring it home and talk to their spouse about it.
Yeah.
That could be talking to your laboratory.
Yeah.
That could be communicating with your specialists.
Yep.
And there's a lot of games of telephone. Remember that old game as a kid?
You tell
this person something, then they interpret it a different way and tell something else. And it can cause a lot of stress when you think you say something that is very understood and easy, and it comes back to be something very different. And so on our last episode, we talked about focusing on what you can control. And I think today that would be the same way. Let's focus on how you can be a better communicator.
Yeah.
So that when you're communicating with your laboratory technician, your specialist, your patient, that they are hearing what you think you should. But again, you can't guarantee that. All you can do is be the best communicator that you can.
And, you know, related to that, we've all noticed patterns of communication or patterns of miscommunication. And when they're really important things, those elements need to be documented in some shape or form. I think one of my first forays after I was in practice, I probably talked about this before, was with denture patients. And so for whatever reason, in my young practice days, I was getting a lot of patients referred to me that came from those denture in a day centers. Now, this is back in the day. We're not talking about implant retained. We're just talking about denture in a day. And because they came from that experience, despite the fact they were in my chair because they didn't like the denture, I started to notice every single time going through the proper protocols at that point in our history before scanning and stuff, they would say, am I getting my dentures today? Like when we were going into jaw relation records. So I created literally like a checklist that they got and that we kept to allow us to communicate in a consistent and documented fashion, so that when there was a question, there wasn't a question, and we had actually something to go back to. So, you know, I think that's kind of a good example to kind of lead into this, because one of the keys to consistent communication can be, or is, I guess you could say, thinking about what you need to create so that when there is that question, you have actually something to go back to, right?
This is so important. I had this happen to me this week. So many of you know that I'm the clinical director of a laboratory. And what's kind of interesting is Martin did the same thing for many years too. So between the two of us, we've had conversations with thousands and thousands of dentists.
Tens of thousands. Just on the lab side,
not even, you know, what we do with mental health and wellness and CE, but just on the lab communication side between the two of us, we've had tens of thousands of discussions. And I had a discussion with a dentist, and I forget what we were doing. I think we were doing maybe There were some upper implant restorations, and there were some lower ones too. And I think the upper, they wanted to be connected, but then the lowers, they wanted to be individual, and they were going to be screw retained and et cetera. And I had the basically the chart, which is, it's something called Labstar that they use in the lab world. And I had that open, and I was writing my note. And as soon as I got off the phone with her, my phone rang. And I answered it, and it was just a personal call. And I forgot to write down my note.
Oops.
And my life went on that day, right? And the next day, the lab asked me a question about this case and said, have you reached out to this doctor? And I said, yes, I did. And I looked at my note, and it wasn't there.
Oof.
And I went to the tab and found that all I had written down, because I was about to write the note, was, I called. Okay. And I had to re and because I have so many of these conversations, I had to reach out to the doctor, and luckily I had her cell. And I said, "Hey doc, I'm so sorry, my brain was kind of fried yesterday when after we got off the call. Did you say that we were going to do this, this, and this?" And I just had to verify this. But gosh, that is so important. And I think at my practice, we have been very good for the last probably 7 years about having a comm log, a communication log. Every time you talk to a patient, this is documented. Now, this takes time, right? You get off the phone, you have a 10-minute call with a patient, you may take 3, 4 minutes just to write down what you did. So it can be like 30% extra time, but I promise you that it's worth it. And the good news is, a lot of that will be automated and is already being automated.
And if nothing else, you can dictate it, right? So
Yes.
if nothing else, and it's that phrase that I used that I slipped in there, if there's a question, there isn't a question. Actually, Richard Hurrell taught me that, who was the one of the leaders at the laboratory that I worked at when I had my laboratory experience over a couple of years. And we had that as a mission statement almost. If there's a question, there isn't a question, meaning just call, right? And so I hear this all the time from specialists in particular, where a patient is referred, we know what's going on as a general dentist. However, the information transmitted isn't complete enough for them to truly understand what's actually going on. And look, can you write everything down? No, you can't. But what you can do, in an example where, for example, if you're referring to a surgical specialist and you say, please evaluate for implant number 30, and you know that there's lots going on the upper, et cetera, you can at the very least say, I realize there's other issues going on. We're in the treatment planning process for the other upper. I'm thinking about possibilities of X, Y, and Z, because your specialist role is to be a true partner with you. And if they start to see something that causes them to question either what's being done, not necessarily even questioning you, but if all they have is please evaluate for implant number 30 and they don't know anything else, of course they're going to question where we're headed. Of course they're going to have questions. And so, one of the things I talk to my specialist coaching clients about, because inevitably this comes up, is have a conversation with your GP around mutuality relative to if there's a question, what do we do? Like, do we have a code where if there's a patient in the chair, it's like, hey, 911, I need to talk to you as soon as possible, recognizing the other party might have a patient in the chair too, of course. But we have to understand, and I think one of the things I want to get across in this episode is, please always put yourself in the other person's shoes and ask yourself a simple question. With the information I provided, if I didn't know anything else, would it be complete enough for that other party to make their own decisions and do what they need to do? I think that's the question we can all ask ourselves.
Yes, how I like to think about this especially now being on in the lab world, is there any assumption being made? Any
Amen.
that could
Amen.
be, and I deal a lot with implant restoration. So, well, it's assumed that, I mean, a lot of people realize how bad cement is for implants. So, like, it's assumed that we're going to do screw retain if they don't mention it. No. It's assumed that we're going to do a custom bump. No. It's assumed that they want titanium or zirconia or full contour this or that. No, nothing is assumed. And I'll tell you from the lab side, and I know this from the lab side, and I think both of us know this from the specialty side too, working with a lot of specialists. Every dentist has their own way of doing things. And if you're assuming anything, and it could be such a common thing, 99% of dentists or 99% of referrals would do it like this, you still can't assume that. That is what causes the problems, the strife, the frustrations with dentists. It's like on the lab side too. Like, let's say we get a case that's a scan for a single crown and the margin is not visible. Most of the time, labs will say, well, let's figure it out. Or let's call the doctor and say that we don't know where it is. What would you like us to do? We're going to guess and mark it. Then maybe we'll send it to you for approval. I am under the impression that we should communicate to the point of where people say, stop bugging me. It's like Martin, you ever have a friend that goes through a bad breakup or, loses a parent or loses a dog or loses their job or they're in a hard situation, right? And you think like, I want to check on them, but like I just talked to them 2 days ago. Like, should I check on them again? I always say, check on them enough to where they say, hey, I'm good. Like, I'm fine. You don't need to talk to me. Okay, or like, hey, let's talk next week. Let's catch up on Friday. And I kind of think that specialty work and laboratory communication needs to be the same thing. I would love if every margin coming from the lab is approved by the doctor, every single one. Because sometimes we'll mark a margin and the doctor will be like, oh no, I wanted it there. Or that's not it. I wanted it here.
So, like in the lab I worked in, and I believe you all do too, like we had preferences on file.
Yes.
And so if you don't have that with your lab, and if you haven't, and or you haven't updated recently, that's a really great conversation to have. So for example, if we can't, the lab, read the margin, what do we do? If nothing else is stated, then I want you to call me, or I want you to send me the scan back or the dye back, depending. If the occlusion, as mounted is tight, I would like a reduction coping,
Yep.
as an example, as another example. So, particularly on the lab side, truthfully, to many degrees, it's more cut and dry to be able to establish those preferences so that you can actually cut down on the need for the total number of communications. It could be a little bit more challenging in the referral process to a specialist, mainly because there's so many variables and every case is different.
That's actually a really good point. Like, wouldn't it be awesome if specialists and referring doctors had preferences on each other?
I talk about this all the time. It's
It's such,
amazing.
it's so simple. It's like a small little system.
It's so simple. What do you want me to do if I don't understand? What do you want me to do? And what do you want me to say if what it is you refer to me, I see it differently and have other ideas? And so if you like that statement, folks, write it down. If I see things differently and I have other ideas, I didn't say if I don't like your treatment plan. that would be terrible. But think about the beauty of the relationship you can draw, because one of the things I think that GPs sometimes forget is the wealth, the depth and breadth of information that specialists have about what works and what doesn't work, based on simply the number of not just cases that they execute on, but the number of offices that refer to them. So they may have suggestions that you may not have even thought of relative to, well, what would you like me to do if this happens? Oh, I didn't think that would be a thing. Yeah, it actually happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens enough. And when it does, it stops everything, blah, 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 blah. Oh, what a great idea. So,
Well, you're creating psychological safety
correct.
with this, is you're allowing like that question coming from the specialist. What would you like me to do if, how did you say it?
I said, how would you like me to, or I'll say it differently again because, you know, the words aren't magical. You can do it eight different ways in a day. What would you like me to do if I have certain ideas that I have that are different than what was proposed? That
Yeah.
was different than what I said before.
You're not, you as a specialist are not telling the dentist, this is what I'm going to do if I don't agree with you. It's saying, how would you like me to handle it? It's opening up for the referring doctor to have the control and have the psychological safety. And the answer may be just go along with my treatment plan, right? It could be.
Actually, I think what I said was relative to making sure the patient communication says consistent. So I think what I said before was, what would you like me to say to the patient if my ideas are different than what you had proposed?
Yes, because I've heard this too on the lab side is I'll talk to a specialist and they'll say, well, I'm doing the case like this, and I say, well, have you thought of using multi-units? They say, oh God, I would love to use multi-units, but the referring doctor doesn't want to use multi-units on this, or they're not familiar with it. And it's sad, I think, because if you're talking about a full arch case, in my opinion, a multi-unit restoration would be better. But the specialist doesn't want to bite the hand that feeds.
And that's a whole nother discussion in and by itself, right? And so that is a reality, that is true, and there are ways to build relationships so that one conversation doesn't necessarily tank everything, right?
So let's give people some tips. If you're talking to a patient, you're talking to a specialist, you're talking to a lab, should you lead with facts, like how we talk about with crucial conversations?
I would say so. Let's talk the lab side first.
Okay.
Then, if you're talking to a dentist who sent you a case, the way I was taught, which I think has a lot of wisdom to it, is you always refer to the items in front of you from your perspective. So when I was at the lab, we weren't scanning like we are today. So it was always my dye or my mounting. And so in this case, it might be my margin drawn on my scan. See what I mean? So you talk about it from my perspective. And so then, so it's like, okay, so the margin drawn on my scan seems to indicate that we have a gap on the, mesial buckle that I can't quite create as a contiguous line. How would you like me to handle this? Right? So you're making it about you. You're not blaming them. You didn't say your scan sucked. You didn't say it's a bad scan. You didn't say the scan wasn't effective. You said basically, I'm having trouble on my scan drawing my margin for this case on the mesial buckle. How would you like me to handle it? They may say, do your best, which in the case of the laboratory I worked in, the next response that I was mandated to state in essence was, great, we'll be happy to do that for you. Just want to make you aware if we go ahead and estimate where this margin is, we will not be able to offer our standard warranty on this case. Oh, really? Why don't you send it to me? I'll draw it myself. Okay, great. Right. So that
Now,
would be the lab side.
talk about that from the dentist side. Talk about the communication from the dentist side, because I'm guessing not a lot of people listening are on the lab side.
Correct.
So if you're a
So,
dentist, what are some things you could do for communicating with your lab that creates the least amount of interpretation, let's say?
So I think the first thing is having a growth mindset and understand one thing or a couple things. Number one, the lab has a vested interest to make you happy. The lab has a vested interest to create a restoration that will be functional and acceptable to the patient in the aesthetic realm and, well, functional and aesthetic realm. They have zero interest in doing anything that will create a remake because that's not beneficial to anybody's party. So if they call you, it is not a knock on your abilities. It is an attempt to drive as much success as humanly possible. And if you're getting more calls than you believe you should be, then from a growth mindset perspective, what I would do, granted hindsight's 2020, what I would do is I would say, you know what? It seems like we're getting a lot of these calls lately. I know you don't want to make them. I don't want to get them. Can we, sit down either in person or over Zoom and go over some of these cases so I can try to start to figure out what I can do differently to make this more predictable?
Yeah.
Because they're not doing it for any other reason to create success. And when you really embrace that idea, it will go from, damn it, the lab's on the phone again, to, oh, the lab's on the phone again. What can we do to make this better? And there is a difference.
When I think about communication from to your lab or to your specialist, I think it comes down to what you said earlier, which is sitting in their shoes a little
Yeah.
bit. So if it's the lab, be very specific about everything that you want. So let's give an implant crown example.
Yeah.
This is the lower left first molar, tooth number 19 if you're in the US, and I would like to do a screw retained full contour zirconia crown with a tie base and a custom zirconia abutment. I would like it to be in occlusion with no excursive interferences, tight contacts, and I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I would have missed.
Shade, shade.
Shade, yes, in
Yeah.
shade A2, right? Now, there may be other things that you may need to say. For example, a lot of implants are being placed subcrestal. Now, thank goodness, because that's most of the time, in my opinion, where they should be placed based on tissue thickness, but I digress. If your implant is placed subcrestal, unless you're sending an X-ray, the lab doesn't know that it's subcrestal.
There,
So
yeah.
if it needs to not have a cone-like emergence profile, if it needs to go straight for the first millimeter or two, you need to say that. Because otherwise, the lab's going to guess. And if they guess wrong, you may not be able to get it down. The patient may have pain on it. You may say it's not seating. What's the problem? Did you
Absolutely.
do this wrong? So be as specific as you can. If you want some special kind of shape, like on a bridge, for example, on a bridge. Don't just say 3-unit bridge from this tooth to this tooth in this material in this color. What kind of pontic design do you want? Right? Is this a patient that needs to have an open pontic design because their hygiene isn't great, or if do all they care about is aesthetics, and you're willing to actually maybe get some food cut there because they really just want a ridge lap and that's all they care about, right? All of these things are decisions that unless you tell someone, they're not going to guess, or unless you tell someone, they will guess. And a surgeon is no different. When you send a patient, like let's say you're sending a patient that has a hopeless tooth for an implant for a surgeon, right? You should say, like, if you want it to be done immediately or not, or you should say, I'll leave that up to you, whatever you think is clinically viable. But let's give that example. Let's say we're doing a premolar, right? First premolar, you have a hopeless tooth. You're sending the surgeon for an extraction and potential implant. Now, are you going to do a provisional on that? Are they going to do the provisional? If they do that, some surgeons do. Or do you want them to bury it? Do you need to have them back to get an impression to maybe make a flipper or make a bonded bridge? I mean, it's a simple referral, but there's so many nuances to it, and you have to be so specific, or else people will assume. And if they assume, many times they will assume incorrectly. That's not their fault though. That's your fault.
And so I think this goes to efficiency too, relative to how you're setting up your own communications from your side. So, like in the subcrestal example that you gave, what if in your preferences it's stated, unless otherwise stated, I want these restored, through, as if it was a subcrestal placement. So, and then in your lab script, it would say, please see preferences. And then you've just covered that base and then you go forward. And what I would say to you too is that having a standard template for your lab cases to some degree that you can pull from and your referring communications are key because, if checklists are good enough for airplane pilots and OR nurses and doctors, I think they're good enough for us. So why not have those types of checklists for referring cases and to the laboratory just so that you don't have to think and that all things are covered? I'll use you as a brilliant example. You just riffed off the top of your head all the things that you would need as a receiving lab party. And you said, what am I leaving out? And I said, the shade. That's easy to do, but not if it's on your template.
That's right. Yeah, in my practice, we made a very robust lab communication template. And guess what? When we got an in-house technician, we still use the same
Of
thing.
course. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it may be a week later, he's working
Yeah.
on it and he doesn't remember
Yeah.
what we talked about.
And here's a good tip. When you look to go create one, let's say it's for your lab and for your, let's just say, surgical specialist, why not send it to them and say, what do you think? What am I missing?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. And it goes back to what you said before,
Yeah.
especially, well, on the lab side and the surgical side,
Yeah, both.
both your lab and your surgical specialist have so much experience
Yeah.
with many different people that they've seen things that you have potentially
Yeah.
never even thought of.
Yeah. And honestly, when it comes to a template, if you only use it 10, 20% of the time, who cares? It's just sitting there as a template. And so, not only can you ask the question to either party lab or specialist, what did I miss? You could also ask the question, what are some of your other exceptional referring doctors in terms of communication? What are they including that I didn't? Will be
That's
another
a
one.
good one. Yeah, I know that the dentist that I talked to from the lab side that asked me questions like that have this growth mindset.
Oh,
They
amen.
say, "Hey doc, how are my scans? What can I do better?" Or they'll say something like, "What are the best scans that you get? What are those docs doing in their impression techniques?" And we have those. And I, there's like two or three doctors that I can think of that their cases are incredible. Their remake rates are so low. No, if they have a remake, it's based on shade or, every once in a while, maybe a contact here or there, something swells or shrinks a little more, or adjacent tooth moves. But margins, almost never. They're doing great prep design, they're doing great retraction, and they're really good at taking their scans or their physical impressions. And most people don't think about that. Like, what is your remake rate? And can you get it down? And how much money and time and heartache does that save you and your patients?
Well, when I was working at the lab, a friend of mine made me a computer program that they called Dentalog, and I literally logged who I called, what the reason was. I kept the categories to a minimum, just to, it was as many as I needed, but also like what the doctor said. And so I literally could search it and find like what's the number one cause of remakes for this doctor, this doctor, this doctor. What is the average remakes for the whole lab? How are they trending versus everybody else? And there were some times when I called folks and said, "Hey, listen, I was looking at the data about our relationship, and I noticed that, I've been calling you X number of times over Y period for X, and it's about 10% more than our average. So I just wanted to call and see, how you would like to handle this, what you would like my help on, how we can reduce these remakes." And, there were those that got nasty with me, but then there were those that were like, "Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Thank you for that. Absolutely. What do we need to do?" And it's just you and I, I'm sure, could do a whole episode on reactions that doctors have given us over the years. But yeah, I'll leave it
Can
there. How about
you
that?
talk a little bit about specialty communication going back to the referring doctor? Because I feel like you are the guy for this with all of your experience with working with hundreds of specialists at Spear for 15 years.
I think one of the biggest things that will keep you out of trouble is having a conversation around what does that individual doctor want you to say to that patient going back?
And you're talking about what should the surgeon say?
What should the surgeon say? Because there could be all kinds of scenarios, or endodontist,
Or yeah, I said
any
surgeon, but yeah.
specialist, really,
Yeah,
any
ortho.
specialist, ortho, I think
Peter.
that's a key thing to start with. Now, granted, can you, is it possible to kind of keep track of everybody's nuances, et cetera? Because I've asked that question once before, and a lot of the specialists that I've asked have basically said, "You know what? Almost everybody's the same. It's a couple here and there that are different, and I just have a list." And so I go in and I remind myself every time I go in if Dr. So-and-so is on the list of different things I want to say. So I think that would be the first thing. I think second thing would be actually communicating to the restorative doctor what it is you said in detail or generalities, depending on the situation. It's important to do what I know most, if not all, specialists do, which is give a detailed description of the clinical procedures performed and their outcome, et cetera. And I also think it's important to also end it with a statement of appreciation, a statement around, what could we do better? And when would be the next time you want to get together, kind of thing. Now, if you're getting a lot of cases from a specific doctor, are they going to overlook it and get blind to it over time? Sure, right? But at the same time, at least you're making the effort. And so,
So let's talk about a case. Let's say you refer a patient to an endodontist and to evaluate for a root canal. And this tooth has a crown on it. And so in order to, if the tooth needs a root canal and the doctor determines that that's the case, they're either going to have to remove the root canal or drill through the tooth. Most of the time, we know they're probably not, or sorry, I said remove the root canal, remove the crown. Most of the time, they're probably not going to remove the crown. Most of the time, they're going to drill through the tooth, right? And let's say they do that, they do the root canal, and now they're going to send the patient back to the referring doctor. What should they say, or what could they say, and how do they make sure that the patient is understanding what may happen in the GP office?
I've had this come up a bunch of times over the years, and there are times when the endodontist feels it doesn't need to be replaced, and there are other times we're like, well, maybe it's on the fence, and there are other times we're like, yeah, we need to replace this. However, at the same time, they're not the ones that are doing it, right? And so I believe almost all, if not all, endodontists are really great at saying, please make sure you go back to your restorative dentist so that this can be treated and, sealed, et cetera, et cetera. They know how to say that better than I do. But I think in terms of the verbiage around the decision relative to the restorative doctor, I would lean towards something like, okay, Mrs. Jones, we were so happy to treat you. We so appreciate Dr. Jones for trusting us to complete this root canal for you. Our portion of the treatment is done. Now it's very important for you to go back and see your, see Dr. So-and-so for the conclusion of this treatment. And some patients will go, oh, okay. And then other patients will say, well, what does that mean? Or what might they need to do? And so I think at that point, you got to be careful, particularly if there's a restorative dentist that, tends to always redo, fixed units or some, you just don't know. It's got to be something like, you know what? Ultimately, this is their decision. About what direction they would like to go. There's a reason why they sent, here we go. There's a reason why they sent you to me because that this is my expertise for the root canal type procedures. What happens next with, let's say, the crown we just drilled through is their expertise, and I would go with whatever it is they choose to decide. That's the way I would handle it.
Yeah, so I love how you said that. Now, I've had this conversation and taught this conversation a lot from the other side, especially from the implant referring for an implant, referring for an extraction. Okay, because I was teaching implants for a lot of years and I still am. Let's say you're sending a patient for an extraction of a tooth. It's a hopeless tooth. It needs to be extracted. There's a vertical root fracture or whatever. And eventually, the patient would like to have an implant. I think the dentist needs to know enough about what the specialist could do to have the conversation, but ultimately, why can't I talk today? Ultimately, leave the decision up to the specialist and make the patient feel comfortable that the specialist will make that decision and you support it. So it would go something like this. Mrs. Jones, I'm going to refer you to Dr. Smith. He or she is going to attempt, you like how I said that, attempt to remove or extract this tooth. At the time of extraction, he or she may do some additional procedures, whether they
Bingo.
see fit. You may hear things like bone grafts, sinus lifts, tissue grafts. They may even attempt to place the implant the same day. I'm not sure, and it kind of depends on how the tooth comes out. But they're really the specialist, and I would trust whatever recommendation they have. If you have any questions, feel free to ask me, but we send you to Dr. Smith because he or she is great and we trust them. Once they are done with that, they will then send you back so that we can finish the restoration. Put the provisional, the final restoration on, but you're going to need to come back to here. Now, why is it important that me as the GP talks to the patient about additional procedures?
Well, I love that you said you may hear things like, right?
Yes.
Because they're not going to remember that whole list, but they're going to remember that you said you may hear things like, which is brilliant, right? And so to answer your question, why is it important? Because you're setting the process up for success, and you're also establishing future trust, and you're mitigating the destruction of trust. Because if you don't mention that, because I too have heard this all the time, where a patient presents it like, oh, now they want to do a bone graft and a sinus lift. They just want to, fund their next Porsche.
Yes.
And, the minute they go in there hearing things that deviate, even if it's not exactly the same words, they not only don't trust the specialist, but then they start questioning you, right?
It's so true. It's if you tell patients, I'm referring you for an extraction, Dr. Smith is going to take out the tooth. And then you get there, and Dr. Smith says, yeah, we're going to take out the tooth and we're going to do a bone graft. They're like, why am I getting upsold? I was just here to get the extraction done.
Bingo.
Think of how you increase the case acceptance of your referral, and ultimately your patient gets better treatment
Oh,
simply
absolutely.
because you added one sentence to your conversation. Now that means the implant can be placed in a better position. That means when you go back to restore it, it's easier for you. I mean, selfishly, from the referring standpoint, the more you prepare your patient for what's going to happen in the specialist practice,
Yeah.
the better it is for you.
It's you know, right before the pandemic, I went and I visited a practice of a periodontist who unfortunately is no longer with us. And if you've ever heard me lecture and you've heard me talk about my team concept and ask you to think about your best, your dearest friend you don't live with, I always say my bestie David. Well, I got to witness David, who's a hygienist, and it was a master class. Because he brought the patient back and said, "Mrs. Jones, my name is David. I'm a hygienist here in this practice. Oh, I understand you were referred from Dr. Smith. Dr. Jones and Dr. Smith have known each other for about 7.5 years. They're in the same study club. We very much so appreciate any patients that come from Dr. Smith's practice because Dr. Smith is so comprehensive and so wonderful. I have some very extensive notes from Dr. Smith here to guide us in our time here today, but I would love to hear from you in your own words why you're here. Like, holy smokes. It
Wow.
was, I was standing there in the corner. He had introduced me. I left that out of my paraphrasing, but I was like, whoa, that's insane. That's amazing. I mean, we could spend a half hour dissecting everything that David did, but think about the trust he built up, the comprehensiveness on both sides that he communicated. It was just, you know, again, a master class in communication,
Well, I
100%.
think it sounds like what he was doing too was having a continuation of care, as
Yes.
if these two practices are almost like one practice in two different
Bingo.
locations. Because
Bingo.
let's be honest, when you get sent to a specialist,
Yeah.
you don't know who they are. You don't know their front office. You don't know where the
Yeah.
bathrooms are. You don't know where to park. I mean, it's
Yeah.
stressful to go to
Yeah.
new situations. Change is
100%.
always hard.
Yeah.
So the more you can reassure that patient that, oh yeah, we love Dr. Mendelsohn. He was just here last week actually, because they had a study club here. And
Exactly.
oh, I just had one of his patients yesterday. Just a wonderful woman. And I mean, it makes you feel like, oh, they know me.
Yeah,
They know my dentist.
totally.
I'm in good hands.
You know, the other thing I want to mention from a tool perspective, you know, as many people know, I was with Spear for many years. I'm no longer with them anymore. And I will tell you that their patient education platform is really quite miraculous because it's not just something you can show in your office, it's something that you can then forward the patient the exact same animated video that they saw in the practice. And if you can coordinate between yourself and your specialist to say, I understand, you know, you saw the video that talked about XYZ. Do you have any questions? Well, I don't really remember it that well. Oh, well, it's, you know, it's 30 seconds, it's a minute. Let's go ahead and revisit that now. Like, holy smokes. Now everybody's on the same page, right?
Yeah.
And you had mentioned this way earlier in today's conversation about, you know, how they communicated to their spouse or their loved one, et cetera. It also answers that question too, because it's like, here, watch this video. And they're even sequestered into, you know, problem versus solution. So it's not, you know, you need an extraction, here's an implant. They're separated. So it's like, you have a fractured tooth, this is what's going to happen. And then it's like, okay, one of the options would be to place an implant. They're actually separate videos. So, and that was actually created based upon market research and consumer behavior research to not conflate the problem and solution in one video, so to speak. So.
Yeah, going back to our endodontist example, I kind of gave the GP referring to the specialist example, and you
Yeah.
gave the endodontist
Yeah.
referring back. And
Yeah.
so if I were to give the endodontist or any type of specialist referring back, it would almost be the same thing, which is like, okay, today we completed your root canal, and I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
We do need to wait over time. Sometimes these need servicings. They can get reinfected. I did have to drill through the top of that crown. I know you've had that crown for a long time, and it's, Dr. Smith did it and it looks really great. I'm going to send you back to Dr. Smith, and he or she is going to evaluate it. I'm not sure what they're going to do. Sometimes they can patch this up with a filling. Sometimes they do need to do a new restoration on this. So that's not really my expertise, but I would trust whatever he or she says. And, if you need anything from us, feel free to let us know. So what I was doing was setting up some options, but also saying, I don't know what it's going to be. I didn't say they're probably just going to patch it because it's pretty small. I mean, more than likely they're going to patch this, right? No, I didn't say that. I said, here's some options. You may hear things like doing a filling in this, like redoing the crown. They may change the crown material now that this tooth has a root canal. And so you're really giving the restorative doctor the option to say what he or she thinks and for the patient to say yes.
Well, and I would almost counter back with don't disagree at all. And depending on the situation, can we even be less definitive? Can it be something like, listen, they're the experts in the crown part of, your oral care. I'm the expert in the root canal part. You may hear various options for how to seal this up for a longer period of time. That's their expertise. I would trust whatever it is they decide. And just kind of
That's a
leave.
great idea. That's a great idea because if there's a cheaper, faster option, and then the dentist picks the more expensive long-term option, they may look like the bad person. So I think that's a good idea. It's funny how when I talked about it from the GP standpoint, I feel like mentioning some of the names was helpful,
Oh,
but I agree
100%.
with you going back the opposite way, at least in that example, not mentioning specifically, but mentioning there may be multiple options is probably a better way of doing it.
It's funny because over the years I've given lectures around this topic, and I've over the last 5 years or so I kind of pivoted to the patient-centric referral. And so the
Yeah, you're the
idea,
master of this.
the overarching idea of that lecture is put yourself in their shoes. And so we've all heard this analogy, and it's in no disrespect to what we do. We are very similar to auto mechanics in terms of the majority of the population has no clue what's happening in there, either in
Yes.
your under your hood or in your mouth. And so if going out of our way to not breed confusion of words or information is quite important, because the minute you even say there could be a less expensive option either way,
Yeah.
then all of a sudden they're like, well, why aren't you choosing the less expensive one? They said that you could do that, right? So it's just something to think about, to put yourself in the patient's shoes or in mind.
Yeah. It's true. Well, I think this has been a good conversation, and really it goes back to something you and I harp on so much, which is like boundaries, expectation, and communication. I mean, setting expectations for patients leaving the practice, coming into the practice from somewhere else, going to the lab is so important from a timing standpoint, from a fees standpoint, from a discomfort pain standpoint. How much time you need to take off of work? How are you going to be talking? What are the aesthetics going to be like? All of those expectations reduce stress by having the conversation up front. And the better you get at this, the better relationships you're going to have. These are the better relationships you're going to have with your team, with your patients, with your family, with your laboratory technician, with your specialist. And so I think whether you're listening to this and you're a specialist, you're a GP, you're a laboratory technician, you're an assistant, this is all very powerful stuff that can make a meaningful difference in your daily life in the dental world. Yeah. So if you're interested in learning some more of these frameworks to get deeper into this, Martin and I go over this on day two of our Lightside Live course. And the next one's happening May 9th and 10th in Irvine, California at Glidewell Dental Lab. You get 12 CE credits. It is such a transformational, fun course that we give. We'd love to see you there. You can go to wellnessanddentistry.com, click on our links, and you'll find the link to sign up. And if you thought that this was a good episode and you got some value out of this, we would encourage you to send it to a friend that may need to hear this, that maybe they need to get better at communication. Or maybe send this to your specialist, or send this to your GP, or send this to your laboratory technician. The more open communication we have in our profession, the less stress and the better wellness everybody has. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.